Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on KKZZ every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of that sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I have a couple of announcements and shout-outs. First of all, if you tuned in at 9 o'clock expecting to hear the Freeman Michael Show, the Freeman Michael Show is on holiday hiatus. You can go to the Freeman Michael Show Facebook page for updates on when Freeman is going to return. Also, if you were listening at 9 o'clock, you knew that Brainstorming with Billy the Brain has expanded. That's right, we're on 2 hours from 9 to 11 each weekday. And during that first hour, I replay all of my best interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. I hope you'll tune in at 9 o'clock for Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Now for my shout-outs. First shout-out is to Nadia Danette, listening to us in St. Louis. Thanks so much for being a loyal listener. She's tuned in to hear our first guest, Edmund Morris. And also a big shout-out to Victor, Paula, Natalie, and Julia, who are going to visit their grandmother during this holiday season. Thank you so much for being listeners to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. As I said, every show has a theme, and today's theme is those who got it right and those who didn't. Each of my three guests will be talking about a person or a group that either succeeded or failed grandly. My first guest is a leading biographer of Presidents Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt. We'll be talking about Theodore Roosevelt's career after he left the White House. My second guest is an expert on getting things right. He's a business execution expert. We'll discuss six companies that failed to execute in 2010 and two companies that did execute in 2010. My third guest believes that our current political system is broken. Our politicians talk around the hard issues but never seem to address them, partly because of partisan politics. He's here to offer some solutions to the impasse. And as always, if you want to join in any of the conversations, you can call us at 639-0008. Edmund Morris, my first guest, was born in Nairobi, Kenya. He's a writer best known for his biographies of United States Presidents Theodore Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan. His biography, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, won the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award back in 1980. After spending 14 years as President Reagan's authorized biographer, he published the national bestseller Dutch, a memoir of Ronald Reagan in 1999. Morris's other books include Theodore Rex, Beethoven, the Universal Composer. Edmund's latest book is titled Colonel Roosevelt, and it's just out now. Welcome to the show, Mr. Morris. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Well, good. Thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Now, to me, Theodore Roosevelt is an iconic figure. It's just amazing. His life really reads like a fantasy. He was a cowboy, a big game hunter, a police commissioner, a writer, certainly a war hero, and then eventually President of the United States. You've just completed the trilogy of Teddy Roosevelt's biography. Give us some insight into the man. What drove Theodore Roosevelt?
Well, he was gifted from birth with phenomenal, inexplicable energy. I say inexplicable because he was a very sickly baby, and doctors figured out that he wouldn't last beyond his third year. He was so afflicted with asthma, heart problems, skin problems, God knows what else. But the endowment of energy that he had in him was remarkable, even as a small, skinny boy. He just somehow radiated energy, and people who came into contact with him time and time again used metaphors to do with radium, volcanoes, electrical dynamos, steam trains, and I think it was really a gift of God, which ironically, is borne out by his name, Theodore, which is Greek for gift of the gods.
Gift of the gods, that's right. How interesting. Well, he is by far the most active president once he left office. In fact, Colonel Roosevelt, that's how he preferred to be addressed after he left office, was by far the most vigorous. Out of office, he actually did some remarkable things. Tell us a little bit about his life once he left the presidency back in, I guess it was 1910, wasn't it?
He left the presidency in March of 1909, where he was only 50 years old. And his the 10 years left to him, 1909 to 1919, which are the years covered by my book, are, in my opinion, even more dramatic than his presidency, because he went from adventure to adventure and great cause to great cause. And there was so much variety in those last 10 years, it's no wonder that a big book is required to deal with them all. For example, within 3 weeks of leaving the White House in the spring of 1909, he was sitting on the cowcatcher of a British colonial locomotive steaming up from Mombasa up into the highlands of Kenya, where I was born, to begin a marathon safari for the Smithsonian, which lasted over a year. And then when he came back from that in 1910, he was greeted as though he was going to run for the presidency again in 1912, which, in fact, he eventually did.
And it was things that happened or occurred while he was on safari, or actually once he learned about them when he got off of safari, that sort of led him back to running for the presidency. So tell us a little bit about what he was incommunicado the entire time that he was in East Africa, but then he came back. What prompted him to reconsider campaigning for the presidency?
You're quite right to say he was incommunicado. I mean, I was growing up in Kenya in the 1940s and 50s, and I felt that the rest of the world was a million miles away. So you can imagine what it was like in 1909, 1910, when he was in the wilderness, literally without contact with anything that was going on outside. But when he came down the Nile in the spring of 1910, after his year in the wilderness, he discovered that all hell had been breaking loose politically in the United States. His hand-picked successor, President Taft, had been proved to be a very ineffective president, was very cozy with corporations, and was undoing much of the progressive legislation that T.R. had been responsible for as president. And T.R. felt an enormous pressure to come back, reclaim leadership of the Republican Party, and indeed run again in 1912 for the White House, which he was very reluctant to do.
Well, now, you say reluctant. It's an interesting point, because he got off of safari and then made his way through Europe. He was feted in Europe almost as if he was going to be the presidential candidate. Had he made up his mind at that point when he was traveling through Europe to run for presidency, or was this something that was just percolating as he went on that trip?
Well, he was about the only person who had not made up his mind, because, as you say, all the kings and emperors who entertained him were quite convinced that he was going to go back to the United States and become president again. There was no constitutional reason in those days why a man could not be president three or four times, or five even, if he could continue running. And he was still so young, so famous, and so full of potential that it was taken for granted he would indeed run. But he himself did not want to. He thought he'd had enough of politics. He'd had two full terms as president, and he really wanted to spend the rest of his life writing books.
Well, let's go down that path, because that was one of the things that I took away from your book, is that Theodore Roosevelt was pretty much of an intellectual himself, which somewhat surprised me, because he was a man of action. That was the image that I had, all action. And yet you write in your book very convincingly that he was an intellectual. Can you expand on that, please?
Well, I would expect Billy the Brain to notice that he was cerebral. You're quite right. He was possessor of a pretty formidable brain of his own. He was a bona fide intellectual, and had been apparently so even when he was still at Harvard. He wrote his first book, in fact, began it as a student in Harvard, and finished it 2 years later. It was a history of the Naval War of 1812, a book so scholarly and so excellently written that it remained definitive for 100 years.
Wow.
And he wrote 40 books in his lifetime, 150,000 letters, and countless periodical essays on the natural sciences, on politics, on literature, biography, history, geography, exploration. So we're talking about a genuinely broad intellect, which only deepened after he left the White House and began to get intellectually interested in many of the main currents of thought of his time, specifically evolutionary science and orthodox religion.
I see. We're talking to Edmund Morris, everybody, author of the book Colonel Roosevelt, The Life of Theodore Roosevelt After He Left the Presidency. And I find it interesting that you are a biographer of Presidents Ronald Reagan, whose presidential library is right here in Ventura County, and also Theodore Roosevelt. But if you had to draw an analogy between Theodore Roosevelt and his intellectual powers, to what other American president do you think he is most closely aligned?
Well, while we're on the subject of Reagan, and I remember that library with great affection, I spent many hours, many days, many weeks there, you'd be surprised how many parallels there were between Reagan and TR. Of course, there were enormous fundamental differences, but both of them had this extraordinary, irresistible personal charm, which they made great use of, cultivating people. Both of them had exquisite humor, which, again, they made use of in their political careers. There's nothing more diplomatically useful than humor in the right situations, as both TR and RR proved. They were both natural showmen who understood the value of timing and self-presentation, and they both, strangely enough, it might surprise many people to know that Reagan was as much a scribbler in his youth as TR was. Reagan doodled short stories and essays as a teenager and as a student at Eureka College, some of which showed quite remarkable literary gifts, which unfortunately never developed later on. But in youth, they were both the same in that respect, always reaching for a pen and scribble, scribble, scribble.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, something else that you neglected to mention that both Ronald Reagan and Theodore Roosevelt shared is they both survived assassination attempts, which will bring us also back to Theodore Roosevelt's run for president. So tell us the story about the assassination attempt on Theodore Roosevelt, please.
Yes, thank you for pointing out that similarity. It's an uncanny similarity between the two assassination attempts, Reagan in March of 1981 and TR in October of 1912. In both cases, they emerged from a hotel. Their limousine was waiting for them. There was a small crowd on the sidewalk. And in both cases, a small, blonde, dull-eyed man stepped forward and shot them point blank in the chest. In TR's case, he was campaigning for another term in the White House in behalf of the Progressive Party, which he had founded, the famous Bull Moose Party. And it was after dinner on October the 14th, 1912, in Milwaukee. He emerged from his hotel. He got shot, as I've just described, and didn't realize at first how badly he'd been hurt because he insisted on being taken to the auditorium where he was due to deliver a major speech. And it was only when he stepped out on stage with blood expanding across his shirt front and he pulled his speech out of his pocket that he saw that the speech, 50 pages long, had been perforated by this bullet that had gone through all his layers of clothing, through the speech, through his steel spectacle case in his vest pocket, and smacked into a rib on a direct trajectory to his heart. So if it hadn't been for those obstacles, he probably would have been dead before he sat down. And he went ahead and he delivered that speech, which lasted for 90 minutes, shouting, "It takes more than that to kill a bull moose."
A very famous line from American history. But I've got to ask you, you are the preeminent researcher of Theodore Roosevelt. Here's a guy who's wounded, and as you pointed out, could have been mortally wounded, but who wasn't. He went ahead and delivered the 90-minute speech in Milwaukee. What motivates a man to do that? What motivated TR in this case?
I think it was a combination of the showmanship I talked about earlier. I mean, this was supremely dramatic theater. You can imagine how the hall gasped when he emerged with blood all over his shirt. But it was also characteristically macho. TR had this attitude to human frailty that it had to be ignored, it had to be surmounted, and that he had a duty to speak, and he took full advantage of the moment. Of course, it was great political theater, and it won him a huge sympathetic vote, but unfortunately it wasn't quite enough to get him elected, and Woodrow Wilson became president.
No, in fact, he split the Republican vote, and that's what allowed Woodrow Wilson to slip in and become elected. We're talking to Edwin Morris, everybody, whose latest book is Colonel Roosevelt, talking about the life and times of Theodore Roosevelt after he left the White House. And Mr. Morris, this is a fascinating interview. I wish it could go on forever, but I've got to conclude it. So I want to conclude with this question. 100 years on, what does Teddy Roosevelt mean to American history today?
Well, many of the great things he stood for, or two of them specifically as president, were the control of corporations by strong centralized government regulation. That was his passion in his first term. And the passion of his second term was the conservation of natural resources. And I think that these two issues are as vital today, in fact, much more so than they were in his own time. So we look back on him for moral example and precepts which we could do well to consider in our present national crisis.
Well said, well said. We've been talking to Edwin Morris, everybody, author of the book Colonel Roosevelt. Mr. Morris, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, they can read the book by ordering it from Amazon.com or from any major bookstore.
Including Bank of Books right here in Ventura. I had to put in a shameless plug for one of our sponsors.
Yes, please do.
So it's available in all of the bookstores, and you can read more about it online as well. Thank you so much, Edmund Morris, for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you and goodbye.